What is working at Edward Jones really like? Hold on a second, because we're going to talk about it. Hey, what's up, party people? It's me, Sarah G, with the Smack, and I'm back. I am a CFA charter holder, and I used to be a financial advisor. On this podcast, I provide non-BS-oriented, straight-up views on LinkedIn and other financial advisor marketing topics. You can't get this anywhere else, people. So if that's of value, then please subscribe. And if not, then please leave this podcast right now. Okay, everybody. So Nathan Pena is a retirement plan consultant, and he's here today to talk about the experience of being an Edward Jones financial advisor. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start off. So right now you are not currently with Edward Jones, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. How did you wind up being an Edward Jones financial advisor at whatever point in the past you were? Tell me this.
Yeah. So I graduated in 2011. So we were still only a year or so out of the recession at that time. And it was tough to get a job as a recent college grad. And I was fortunate enough where I actually had the offer from Edward Jones about 2 or 3 months before I graduated. There was an Edward Jones advisor who actually was hoping to do some kind of seminar at the school my mom works at. And the two of them were talking, and she was like, my son is studying finance, going to be graduating soon. Can I introduce you, or can I have him, you know, reach out? And it kind of started from there. So, you know, he really kind of got the ball rolling for me. And so that was back in 2011.
Okay. So Nate, what was your original motivation for taking the offer though?
The name was strong, as you know, a college grad, you know, that young, you want to manage money, you need a strong name behind you. They also offered a salary. It wasn't a lot, but still it was a salary, and offered in, you know, compensation while I was studying for the Series 7 and 66, where none of the other offers that I had offered that as well.
Right. So you're sitting here saying, okay, you know, this was your undergraduate, right? That you're graduating
correct.
From. You're sitting here saying, okay, well, I could go work for an insurance company and be broke while I'm getting my licenses and ramping up and be hustling every day for a $200 commission for selling a 20-year life policy, term policy, right? Or I could go and be kind of maybe supported a little bit more in the beginning, right? So that was attractive to you, the salary.
Absolutely.
Okay. Were there any other benefits? And the reason that I'm going into this is that I want people to understand what it's advertised as, is what it eventually ends up being, and the different angles on that. So what else were you thinking at that point? Like, was it the training that you thought would be great? Were they saying they were going to give you a mentor?
So my path was a little bit different than what is traditional. And then also it has changed substantially since then. So when I started, I went into an advisor training program in the corporate office in St. Louis. I had 2 months to study for my 7 and 66, and then moved to St. Louis, did that advisor training program. But during that time while I was studying, they did offer a lot of support. I think there was a weekly call we had with our trainer who would help with any study-related questions while going through the 7 and 66. And there was also monitoring progress. So every time you did a chapter exam, they would be monitoring how you scored on that exam, because there was a correlation in how you did on the practice exam and what that would look like on the actual exam. So, you know, there were certain benchmarks you had to hit basically in order to keep going. And then once you got through that training, again, same thing, you always had someone overseeing your development, someone overseeing the training, people you could reach out to. And then eventually when you get into the field, you're assigned a mentor, but you could always go out and find somebody yourself, someone that you kind of mesh with and have them help you out, teach you the things that you weren't taught before, you know, the actual day-to-day real life stuff on how to manage a book of business and how to prospect for a book of business and so on.
Okay. So it sounds like it was a relatively kind of nurturing process.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, a lot of hand holding, which is good.
And so what was it like when you first started out in that process? Were you feeling good about the job? Did you feel like you were getting somewhere? Like what was it like initially being an Edward Jones financial advisor?
So from St. Louis, they moved me to a rural part of Central Florida. That was tough, but there was still a lot of support, but at that point you're kind of more or less on your own. Like you have to go out and find the people. You got to go and find prospects and start building that prospect list. There is support. But again, you're kind of left on your own. You still, like I said, you have that salary to kind of help out because that first year is brutal. It's pretty tough, but that support doesn't go away. It just shifts a lot during that first year. Again, this was back over a decade ago, and it has changed as far as I know.
But Nate, so you were just sitting there one day, or you were just doing your work one day, and you get a call from the home office that says, ta-da, you're going to be shipped out to Central Florida now. Like, is that how that happened?
Kind of. I told them I wanted to. So I'm originally from the Northeast. I said I wanted to be in Florida. Hate the cold, like warm weather. So they're like, all right, so if something opens up in Florida, we'll let you know. And that's kind of what it was. And I think they gave me 1 week's heads up and said, hey, there's an office open. This is your one shot basically to go check it out and see if you want to move there. If not, then I don't know what to tell you. So it's kind of like, you got to go. You don't really have the option to be like, I want something better. And so I went out, got to Central Florida, a town called Ocala. And yes. And then I think maybe a month later I was there starting fresh.
Brutal.
Yeah, yo, heck yeah. Not a good fit at all for a lot of reasons, but yes.
Okay. So what happens next?
You're an advisor. You're a full-fledged advisor. I had a book that I took over. It was a very small book. Go out and prospect, manage the book, try to build it, do as much as you can, and hit your numbers.
So they gave you a book of business?
Yeah, it was a $5 million book. I was like the fifth advisor in 4 years that was in that office. So it was not good, really. But you know, I focused more so on building the book rather than what was there. I was managing what was there, but I really needed to focus on building it rather than, because you can't live off of $5 million AUM.
No. Okay. So why do you think so many Edward Jones reps don't make it?
Two reasons, I guess. So when I was there, I want to say the attrition rate was like 80% in your first year, give or take. Could have been higher. When I first started, those that failed because they just didn't do the work. For most people that didn't go my route, that went more of a traditional, hey, you got to study and start prospecting, Edward Jones gave them 2 months of nothing else to do other than prospect. You're done studying. You don't have to worry about exams. You just got to prospect, preferably 6 days a week. Just prospect, build up that list. And then once you have your, what's it called, can't advise date, I guess is what it's called now, then you can start calling on them, start trying to convert them into clients. So most of the time, you just don't do the work is really what it happens to be. And a lot of times is you might hit it off with one or two or three good prospects because the goal that first year is really small, very attainable if you're doing the work. You might find a couple of prospects that really make that year for you and you kind of take your foot off the gas and you slow down. And then by the time you ramp up, you're already way too behind. But now from the time that I left in 2017, most of the advisors were just given $20, $30, $40 million of AUM, most of it fee-based, and they don't do the work because eventually it does catch up to you as well.
So when you say not doing the work, do you mean, I mean, there's a daily quota from what I understand that Edward Jones financial advisors have to meet in terms of making contact
yeah, that it's prospecting. Prospecting, managing the existing book. Obviously, you can never stop prospecting. It just shifts as your practice grows and it evolves, but you don't ever stop prospecting. Those that stop prospecting, they feel it really fast, and it, to the point where by the time they realize it, they're already 2-3 months behind where they should be. And it's difficult to catch up from that point on, because the numbers start to really ramp up the longer you're there.
What was it like having the experience of having to go out and prospect every single day?
Brutal, especially in Florida. So Edward Jones, when I started, was you got to go out and knock on people's doors and get them to talk about their savings. So it was quite difficult. And quite weirdly, it works. I was able to get a lot of really good clients knocking on their door, talking about money. Now I know, because of COVID, I think they've shifted more towards traditional networking processes or styles. But going out, building that community relationship, I guess, with the local area that you're in, it's not fun in the Florida summer, where it's 90 plus degrees with 100% humidity. So sometimes people just take pity on you, and they'll continue talking to you, and eventually maybe give you $5,000.
Come in the air conditioning, right?
Yeah.
But what was it like having to go into somebody's house that you didn't know? I mean, weren't you a little bit scared?
Absolutely. I did have a couple people pull a gun on me, which was not fun. Again, you're in rural.
Hold on a second, Nate. Yep. Are you kidding me? Are you literally kidding?
No, I'm dead serious. It happens quite often, where someone has either, it's maybe not trained on you, but their hand is on a weapon. It happens a lot with a lot of advisors.
Okay, no, that's important. Because you know what? One day I posted something to my social media about how I had just had a baby, and I knew this woman from the playground, and I was talking to her once, and I'm like, oh yeah, like I work in insurance. And she's like, oh, I need to talk about that. You should come sometime. And so I went, I had this newborn baby, and I'm sitting there and I'm talking to her, and I'm like, so what are your plans for, like, if something were to happen to you? And she's like, well, I just rely on my parents. And I'm like, really? Like, but have you discussed this with them? And all of a sudden she goes nuts, like literally flips, goes nuts, and is like, I don't know, this is none of your business. I don't know where you're going. And I'm like, whoa, dude. Like, I'm sitting there. I had just had my second child. I have four kids. I had just had my second baby. And I was there with actually my first child too, because she had a child about my first baby's age. And so I'm like, just making excuse, like I cut the meeting short and I just got out of there. But I was like, whoa. And I posted about this on social media, not even thinking anybody would have anything to say. And then I was so astounded when so many people posted back with like a similar story. Like there were numerous people. Okay. So Nate, how does that happen that like you go in their house and you're sitting there talking and you're just like, how do you start the conversation about money?
I'm not a in your face sales kind of person. I'm more that relationship really driven sales guy. So my spiel, if I remember right, was like, I got a local business. Here's what I do. If you want to have a chat, let's have a chat. If not, no big deal. And then I think that kind of helped ease the tension a little bit. I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to sell you a $25,000 bond right now. And I think that helped. There were a lot of people who invited me into their house, sat down at the kitchen table. We had water, tea, whatever. And we just chatted about stuff. And eventually the conversation led to money, or about why I do what I do, or what their particular situation is. There's not a lot of people who are open or comfortable talking about their finances to strangers. I mean, even to their family. But you will find, surprisingly, knocking on a random person's door, asking them to talk about money, you will find a staggering number of people who are completely comfortable and open talking about their situation and what their portfolio is doing and how often they meet with their advisor and all this. And it's astounding.
after those things happened, though, when you would go in there and someone would pull a gun on you, like, did anybody ever brandish a weapon on you?
Yes. Yes, actually. Okay. Yeah. So in rural Florida, it's difficult to be a man of color walking around knocking on random people's homes.
So can I ask you, what's your ethnicity?
I'm Portuguese, but I'm black. You know, I have dark skin tone. So my family is predominantly from African, and okay. So there was one instance where I was actually chased out of a neighborhood because someone was coming at me with a weed whacker, literally walking behind me, revving the thing up. And he just kept walking faster and faster behind me. And I was like, all right, this is not okay. So that's happened. Someone did reach for a gun one time when I was talking to them. There were people who would lock their doors when they see me come. It's a thing. And it's sad. But it happens where other advisors, maybe not to that extent, when no one comes at them with a weapon, you know, because people think they're trying to, you know what, I'm going to take one step back. I have had the police call on me because I fit a description. That's it. Nothing more. But I actually ended up turning the officer into a prospect, which was a good conversation also.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was tough. So I stopped knocking on doors.
Nate, I'm so sorry. These injustices, they're not just what people blog about or that you read about in the news articles. You know, for everyone listening to this, please understand that the reality of being a person who looks a certain way in America and everywhere across the world is, I mean, it's an adversity. Mm-hmm. It can be such an adversity. And so when people say these things about diversity and inclusion, they're not just making it up. It comes from experiences like this. Nate, I'm so sorry. You know, maybe there could have been better preparation for this. Maybe that territory wasn't the best place. Was there any safety training?
No. So what frustrated me more so than that was when I had a conversation with with one of the partners, and he was the one who kind of tried to get me in, you know, to that part of Florida. When I had a conversation with him a year and a half of being there, he told me, I didn't think it was going to be, you know, a good fit for you there, but I knew you would do well. Like, you can't tell me that the exact reason I'm telling you I need to get out of there is why you didn't think it would be good. I mean, that's a problem. But nothing was done until I voiced that frustration in an email to compliance or to HR. I forgot who it was. Did anything actually get done? Because from that conversation with that partner until the time I relocated to my practice to Tampa, I think it was probably about 6 months or so.
Too long.
Yeah, way too long. Way too long.
I mean, the situation was kind of set up for failure. Not that you failed, but it sounds like the odds were stacked against you.
Very much so. I'm not. So some of the mentors I had were, ironically, was not set out this way. There were other, you know, people of color. There were Hispanic advisors. There were a handful of the Caucasian advisors. And you know, they had my back. You know, when I don't talk about this that often. I have more so now because it's just, you know, it's happened so long ago, and I think it's something that people need to know. But then it was difficult for me to share that with anybody. And but to know that,
why was it difficult?
I didn't want it to be seen as an excuse as to why, you know, I had a tough month. Or tough couple of weeks, whatever. I didn't want that to be seen as a hindrance, as, you know, oh, well, he's not doing well. Why? And, you know, I didn't want that to be like, well, that's just an excuse. You know, you could just go to another neighborhood, which I actually was told, well, just don't go back there. Go to someplace else. So I kind of kept that under wraps for a very long time, and only told a select few people.
it's not that it's easy in the first place to go out there and knock on doors. When I was younger, in my 20s and maybe even in my 30s, I had this job cold calling. I never had to knock on doors, but it was soul killing enough just to go out and every single day. I mean, I can't even believe it when I look back. I don't know if you can empathize with this at all, but I can't even believe looking back that there were times in my life where every single day I went into work and was on the phone for 8 hours a day making cold calls. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even believe mentally how I got through that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a mental challenge in the first place. And then on top of it, because you're a person of color, you have people that just naturally are going to be skeptical. I mean, I think it's such a testament to your skill and your tenacity that you were able to get as far as you did, because a lot of people would have found those challenges insurmountable. Mm-hmm. And it also just, now I'm just, my mind is racing here, hearing these things, and I'm thinking about why there isn't more safety training for people who are going door to door, going in people's homes. When you think about, I mean, myself as a woman, right? Like, I went into this other woman's house and I had two kids with me, but just be also being a woman, not that men aren't taken advantage of or raped or assaulted, but it is common with women to be the victims of sexual assault. I'm surprised that there isn't more safety training or more of an open forum for discussing these kinds of fears, because I can't imagine anybody, male, female, whatever race, whatever height, whatever build, anybody, I can't imagine anybody not having safety concerns when they're in this kind of a situation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I think it was just use your best judgment was the quote unquote safety training. I can't remember there being an hour long tutorial or days long conversation on how to keep yourself safe when doing this. You know, everyone had something different. I never had a conversation with any female colleagues about what they did or what they went through. No one ever talked about any kind of adverse conversations. It was usually, oh yeah, an old guy answered the door in his boxers. That was kind of like the extent of it. but maybe it's the same thing, but
they're not telling.
Very, very possible. Very possible.
What's more likely is that women that go into these kinds of situations maybe just get kind of like have comments thrown at them or like insinuation, you know what I mean? Or like intimations towards like, so are you single? That kind of a thing. I would imagine that more so, but it's not to say that they aren't outright assaulted. Who knows? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, use your best judgment. It's like, oh great. So what do I do when he's got me in a chokehold?
Yeah.
You know, or when he's got both my hands in his hand and he's like, okay. Well, anyway, so what do you think was the marketing strategy that you feel worked the best for you as an Edward Jones advisor when you were out there? Like, what approach? I know they probably have tons of training, but what worked for you?
So the knocking on doors did work. And then once I got away from it, I was able to get my practice big enough, or not necessarily big enough, but to the point where I didn't have to do that anymore. And I could shift my focus to more referral-based and networking-based prospecting. And that's what I did. And that really worked for me and helped kind of turn my practice around in the sense where I didn't have to worry about just asset management or bringing in assets. I could focus on what I wanted, which was more comprehensive planning. So I worked with a state attorney, I worked with CPAs, I worked with other professionals on having that open relationship with them where you have a client, please remember to make me part of your value proposition, because that's what I'm going to do. You know, when I have that conversation about estate planning, I'm talking about my specific estate planning attorney that I partner with. I don't talk about what I do. I talk about the attorney that I work with. And then when I moved to Tampa, I immediately started joining civic organizations and you know, sat on some boards and did a lot of community stuff where I got my name out there. And I worked very hard to make sure I had a positive reputation. And it did work, because when I would go and introduce myself to somebody, a lot of times I'm like, oh yeah, I know, I've heard about you. So-and-so was talking to me about you. They said, we need to connect, blah, blah, blah. So it worked, and it was really good. And I didn't have to worry so much about bringing in every single dollar, turning that into a commission so I could eat. I knew that it was, you know, I got it to the point where it was nice and consistent and on a turnkey, basically, I guess is the only term that I can think of.
So what would you say didn't work?
In terms of marketing?
Yeah. Well, if you were to talk to, because people listen to this that are going into the program or looking to be an Edward Jones financial advisor, are curious about becoming an Edward Jones financial advisor, what would you say to them, like, don't do this?
Don't follow what somebody tells you worked for them word for word. It worked for them doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you. And if you spend copious amounts of time on trying to do that one particular strategy that worked for another advisor, you could fall behind because you realize 2-3 weeks later, this thing doesn't work. You just got to find what works with your skill set and your personality, your strengths, and do that. Take bits and pieces of what people tell you, make it your own, and then go from there.
Yeah.
I tried that. I tried doing what, oh, this advisor did that, and I see where they're at, so I should be doing that too. And then I'm banging my head against the wall. Why isn't this working? I'm using the exact verbiage that they use. It doesn't work.
Once I had this sales training program where I went to the sales seminar. It was this small, like, 3-day workshop. And this one sales trainer made us memorize this script. And every time I've had to memorize a script, it never works. Because I never quite feel like, and then we had to recite it like exactly from memory. And it was this whole thing. And it's not that I don't believe in scripted speech, because I do think you should go in there and have an idea of the concepts you want to bring out and the questions you want to ask. But just in general, it's always better to go with what flexes to your personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like, to that point, right, that script was someone else's words. That was what worked for them. You know, you can't train a bunch of people to use your words that worked for you. You know, obviously a script in cold calling in New York City is going to be different than cold calling in Peoria, Illinois. It's not going to be the same. You got to use different words.
Yeah.
Different tone, different pace of speech, and so on.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, Nate, thank you so much for being here with us. And everybody, I hope that you've enjoyed our interview on the experience of being an Edward Jones financial advisor. Everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this show.